Step into Mind Matters, where we reveal the high-stakes world of CEOs, from their first-day jitters to game-changing strategies, and equip you with invaluable insights and practical advice essential for your personal growth and leadership journey. And now, Mind Matters.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Mind Matters. I'm your host, Kendall Raisler, and I'm thrilled to have an exceptional guest with me today. He brings a wealth of knowledge and expertise as the COO of Wanilla Advisors. And I'm looking forward to delving into the insightful conversations. So get ready for an engaging, informative episode and welcome Neil Oswald to our show. Welcome, Neil.
Hi, Kendall. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thanks for being with us. Before we delve into our conversation, we'd love to give our listener a little more insight into your background, of the journey that you've had, your experiences, and how you've taken the highlights of your professional journey. Okay, so we're excited to learn more about you. Would you please go ahead? Let's dive in.
Sure, Kendall. Thanks for the opportunity. I've started a long time ago in the audit firms of Ernst & Young and got my audit CA, and then started working in consulting to help banks build trading and risk systems, and did that for a few years, and then took on larger roles and larger programs and larger transformations. My technical background is I'm a CPA, but I also took the CFA, so I'd understand finance and risk better, but then also took degrees in certified management consulting and other degrees to help me get to be a better, more resourceful consultant. And so my consulting has been around the blend of finance, risk, operations, tech, with business strategy. And so I start usually with the strategy, and then what are we trying to achieve? How do we make the change? And then I end up executing the change. That's the top level background that I have.
That's fantastic. That gives you a lot of experience in a number of different sectors.
It did.
What did you find was your largest challenge when you first started into the tech section in, let's say, the banking industry area?
Well, usually when people hire a consultant, they're actually needing help. They want a change. And so, or they can't do it themselves, or they've got just too much work to do to get it done. And so you have to come in with a mind of getting things done and executing well. Consultants sometimes get a bad reputation for not getting things done or not improving things. And I'm as bound and determined not to ever have that reputation. And so I would actually professionally finish phase one of a job before and leave the building before you sell phase two. And always putting clients first was another part of that equation. So if I was the client, would I want to pay for this? Is it valuable to the client? And that work led me to a good career in consulting because people would just hire me.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, when you talk about people, Neil, it's got to be challenging that when you come into an organization that people's mindsets are in one direction and they've been in that direction and running. Now you're coming into the company to help them out and your mindset might be a different way than theirs. How do you handle the different levels of the people when you're doing that?
Yeah. So like usually if you spend enough time working for banks, like 7 to 10 banks a year, you develop a pretty good perspective on how banks work. And you can usually walk in and in a few interviews, figure out what's really the agenda and what really needs to be done. And then you just have to make sure you get people aligned around the collective agenda. In the banks, there's usually some politics, there's usually some fiefdoms, there's usually some barriers. And you got to figure out a way around those barriers. And my wife would say to me, "Oh, you got one of those problems now because you're stewing on a problem because you haven't got the answer in your head that is exactly the way to get it done." But with enough thought and enough careful planning, you usually can get people to align and get things done. I'm proud to say I don't have any failed projects, and you know, that's a good record to have.
Well, Neil, you have a fantastic persona about you, and not only your persona, but your reputation has stands out very much. I'm happy to have met you before our episode as well, and to get to know some of the work that you've done when you worked at one of the banks that we had dealt with. And I was impressed with the way that you control might be a very strong word, but the way that you ran the conversations and the way you explained to everybody. Was there a mentor or anybody else that helped you work through that, that you had, that, that taught you to do that? Or is it just natural?
Well, the general idea is that you have to understand the person you're talking to and really understand their perspective before you should speak. So if you think about sitting in a group of a finance, a risk, an ops, and a tech guy, and if you don't understand their perspectives and what they care about, you probably can't have an effective conversation. And so understanding what's on their agenda and what they want out of the project and what everybody collectively wants out of the project, and then figure out an alignment there. That's the biggest challenge, actually. And you have to do a lot of little homework on that, because if you don't talk to people and understand what they're trying to do, you'll walk in with a pre-canned answer and it won't fit and it won't work. And the other thing to add to that is listening. I was working on a project at one place, and I'm working with a large group of people, like 30 people in a room, and way in the back, someone said, "It's not going to work," very quietly. I heard that, and I called the person out to tell me why they thought it wasn't working. And sure enough, she was right. If I just ignored that little comment in the back, we would have been in trouble, you know, down the road as we were going. But because you listened and gave people the opportunity to speak about what they're trying to do, you can get the right answer collectively. The group is always smarter than the individual. So use the group.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, I've heard from a number of CEOs and C-suite people that it's about listening and understanding and walking through them. A lot of challenges that people have made is where they, like you said, they use that pre-canned presentation and they think that this should fit, because everybody thinks that tech is a SaaS model where here it is, it's click, 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 click. And that's great in some areas, but in most areas, when you're looking at banking and you're looking at finance, it doesn't quite fit. It's not a one size fits all. So when you're dealing with like a CEO, have you ever dealt with a CEO who has a very large ego and doesn't want to be able to listen to you?
Many. So that's the answer is yes. But usually there's some substance behind the ego. They're doing certain things they need to get done, and they are used to just telling people. And there's a way to get a CEO to talk about his vision, his mission, his values, and then work from that to actually make the change happen the way the CEO envisions it, but also the way the organization needs it. And so there's some happy marriage between what the organization needs and what the CEO wants, and you figure out a way to get it done. I'd also argue a little bit, it's about leadership. And so CEOs have open minds usually. And if you can give them some guidance on how you're thinking about the problem and how they're thinking about the problem, usually there's some happy middle ground there where there's a good answer for everybody involved.
So on your first day, when you first started, we'll say a couple years ago, okay, I'd like to ask the question. There would have been a lot of nerves in you, a lot of feeling like our listeners are, we have a number of listeners here that are CEOs that are brand new. Some are 2, 4, 10, 15 years that are listening to this. And I'd like the audience to really understand that initial nerves that you felt and how it was and how you dealt with that. Because remember, you were the new guy coming in as COO or C-suite in order to help out. What was that like?
Yeah. Well, usually on a consulting assignment, there's a few people who want you to prove that you actually should be there. Like, yet you have earned the stripes to be in the room to have the conversation. And so you can try to lay down your credentials and lay down your background and experience, or you can listen and then add some insight into the conversation that they might not have had. And so I kind of deal with it that way. I don't come in and try to present that I'm the gift that keeps giving. I present, what are you trying to do? How are you going to solve it? And then have a conversation about, okay, here's some ideas that I have. What do you think of those ideas? And usually we end up creating a straw man, some sort of straw man solution, and then work the group and the room to evaluate and expand that straw man so there's a consensus around the solution you're trying to get to. I have had some CEOs that have a predefined answer, and then you have to figure out how you're going to change that CEO's mind. And that's a bit of a struggle, but I don't think you, I think CEOs still listen if you say, listen, I think that's not the right way to go, and here's why. And you better have your facts straight. I always come well-armed with lots of data and lots of facts and lots of proof. And, you know, if I'm getting challenged, I'm usually well-prepared for a debate and a discussion, and not in a confrontational way, in a getting to the right answer way. And that's how I handle it.
So back to working as a group and as a team. And, yep. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that'll help a lot of listeners out there. You know, Neil, as a consultant and going from company to company to company, you have to have the ability to spin a lot of plates fast, catch on to them. Because like you say, cultures are different. We have a culture in one company A, culture in company B. One size doesn't fit all, as we well know. Okay.
Yep.
But when you're spinning all of those plates, how do you keep a life work balance?
Well, I concluded early in my consulting career, I could only handle 9 concurrent assignments. So if I took more than 9, the wheels came off. And so I set a limit and stick to the limit. Because when you can't spend the quality time you need to spend, you're not going to do the job you need to do, and you're not going to be happy with the job that comes out. So, the other part of this equation is have good people, working with me. So the staff I recruit in one place, I had like 27 staff working with me in a consulting role. They had 35 languages across the 27 people. They had PhDs and math degrees and data science degrees. And so I actually, horses for courses, you'd enlist your people to help you solve the problem. And it's not quite like landing a space shuttle, but it's basically, okay, how are we going to solve this? And so you lean on your internal team to figure out the best answer, and you lean on your client team to also help you with that answer, and you figure it out. Because if it was straightforward, they wouldn't be hiring a consultant.
No. Yeah, if they had the answer, why would they spend the money, right?
Right.
So, Neil, what happens when, what has happened in the past? This is, must have happened to you. And a lot of CEOs have brought this up to us in questions that have come back to us after episodes, is dealing with finding the right people.
Oh, yeah.
How do you find the right people? How do you manage the right people? There's many books, there's many videos, yeah, things that tell you how to do it. But how have you done it, Neil, in order to handle someone that's been a challenge and realize they're not the right player for it? How did you measure and handle that?
So I like to look at consultants like Venn diagrams. You have a degree in finance, experience in risk, experience in technology, experience in strategy, and the Venn diagrams intersect in an individual. Mm-hmm. And as I coach staff, I try to say, build your Venn diagram. You have an ore body in finance, an ore body in risk, an ore body in technology, an ore body in people and culture. And build your ore bodies and invest in yourself to make sure you're universal. Because if you can speak several languages, several disciplines as a consultant, you'll do better. And so I actually look for people who already have some of that in their background, where they're diverse, where they are curious, where they are investing beyond their natural domain in other things. And so my example is I took the CPA exam, but then I went and got the CFA exam. At the time, I was one of 3 in Canada with a CPA and a CFA. So 1 of 3 made me able to talk to traders and able to talk to finance guys about the risk systems and technology I was implementing, so I could speak their cross-discipline language. So as I recruit for that cross-discipline orientation, and then I'd recruit for a spark of creative thinking. So I didn't want somebody who wanted to stick in the functional discipline of finance, risk, ops, tech, or strategy. I wanted them to be creative, to think laterally across those disciplines. And so in the interview, I'd ask them problem sets to say, hey, how would you solve this problem? How would you solve this problem? And if they couldn't fathom a way to solve that problem, yeah, they weren't probably going to get hired. And that was pretty easy to weed out people who just want a function and a role, as opposed to people who want to creatively solve problems.
So that makes a lot of sense to me. And when I'm listening to that, that's bringing them on. But what about when they're in the system? I'd like to say nobody ever hires somebody wrong, but that's just probably not a reality. And when that does, how do you measure that? How do you cut and measure that properly? For time is money, and to replace somebody takes time again.
This episode is powered by Onist AI. Onist's optimized onboarding process and minimized documentation result in an expedited and seamless financing journey for clients, enhancing their contentment and commitment. Through identity verification, financial data validation, and creditworthiness assessment, our software empowers companies to make well-informed financing choices, bolster application speed and customer uptake by 30%, and cut operational costs by a significant 70% with Onist AI. For more information, visit onist.ai.
If you're in the business of consulting, it's a very relatively short fuse. You either like it or you don't. And you either like the challenge of two or three concurrent assignments, or you like the challenge of the bit of travel, you like the challenge of the various organizations. And so if people don't feel right in that environment, they self-select. I in my years of consulting, I don't think I've ever fired more than one or two people. And usually when I fired people, it was because I didn't like the ethics they were operating with. And I didn't want them on the team because they were not playing team ball. And so I would call that out and make an adjustment. The other thing to give you a little bit, I'd really look for leadership. I look for someone who's got a vision or a plan looking out into the future, because I don't want them think looking back, because the answer back is not the answer forward at all. And so I look for people who are curious and thought-provoking and trying to do better.
Well, that would make sense why you like tech then too, because looking forward and looking forward is where we have to look. Looking back is living in the past, and I agree with that 100%. And everybody will see the value in that. When you're looking at tech and you're looking forward, you brought up risk managers. That is a great topic to talk about, because when you're looking forward, you've got people like people, and this is what we are. This is natural, and this is the way I believe it should be. But as technology is coming along, it replaces a lot of jobs. It replaces, now it doesn't mean that people become redundant, they can be used elsewhere. But how do you handle that? Like if you're doing something, coming as a consultant, you're reorganizing and trying to help out, and you don't need 50 jobs in there that were there before or whatever number. How do you mitigate that?
So in my last role as COO, we had to do a lot of automation, a lot of process reengineering, a lot of change to the organization. And I told people I wouldn't fire people. And the reason I didn't want to fire people is I wanted to redeploy them to the new businesses we were building. And so that I kept my promise. I didn't fire people. We managed to redeploy the people that were no longer needed because we made some automations or some improvements into different roles. And actually, they were saying this is way better than the stuff I was doing before. Because you think what automation's about, it's eliminating the work that is probably pretty routine and pretty standardized. Whereas if you can actually get someone to take on a bit of a challenge and have a better day, they're going to want to come to work more. The other thing that I probably mentioned, I have this philosophy about the vectors of change in a digital economy. So I try to get people to see those things. So there are five vectors of change in the digital economy. There's a leadership vector, the process vector, technology vector, the data vector, and the culture vector. Okay. And if you don't have people thinking that it used to be you could do people, process, technology and treat them separately, you can't do that anymore. You got to change your people, your process, and your technology and your data at once. Well, that takes new leadership skills, that takes new culture. That vectors of change view I would talk about with people. You know, we're not just putting in this piece of software. We're actually changing the operating model of the firm, changing the business model, and we're going to need the following leadership, culture, behavior, process, data, analytics to support that. So give them the vision of the change, and they'll usually buy in. And then those who don't buy in, they'll self-select and they'll leave.
Those are very, very wise words, Neil. I appreciate that. And I think our listeners will get a lot of value out of that, because I know that's a challenge that CEOs have had. I know it's a challenge that a lot of C-suites ha have had. In hindsight, Neil, What advice would you give yourself on your past and the first things that people could do to scale their company?
The advice I'd probably give is not to be comfortable in the status quo. Because if you're comfortable in status quo, you do not change. You do not look for the next best thing. You do not go invest in new markets, new products, new people, whatever. And so I would encourage people not to be comfortable in the status quo, because I think if you are comfortable in the status quo, you're not going to last. And so I used to tell my staff, the day you stop investing in yourself is the day you better be ready for retirement. And so I actually tell them and give them reading programs, like off my bookshelf, I'd say, you need to read this, you need to read this, you need to see that. And I try to get people to think about their future in concrete terms. Where do I want to be in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, right? And so I think to scale, you can scale with technology for sure, but you also have to scale with the surrounding people and culture to execute the work around the technology. And so you have to create that vision, that leadership part, and make sure they understand why we are doing this. And so if you're doing an automation or you're doing a re-engineering or you're creating a new digital operating model, people have to see that vision, align the mission, vision, values with the operational changes you're making, and make sure everybody understands that and gets behind it. That's just natural to do.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense to me. When we are scaling companies, and companies are scaling, people do get lost at, oh, technology is everything, it does it all. And like you said, that is not the factor by any means. When I look at something like CEOs have talked to me, C-suites have asked me, you know, about marketing. And they've said, oh, marketing is, you know, it's a good thing. Everyone's hitting with CRM, CRM, CRM. And even myself alone, I get tired of all the emails that show up in my inbox of how they're going to change my world in two-line sentences. What do you see as the future of that, of marketing, of connecting? Do you see... Yeah, but what do you see? I'll just leave that open.
Sure. I mean, person to person, you have to be authentic for sure. Genuine, honest, ethical, right? But if you think about that in a digital sense, you still have to be genuine, honest, ethical, right? It's just it had to come through in your communication. And so you have to understand who you're marketing to, what are those segments, what do they value, what do they want, and get your messages out to them. And that may sound trivial, but that's hard, because you got to get it to them at the right time in the right form when they're ready to consume it. And so if it's an SMS message, if it's an online message, if it's a forum on a website, you got to make it so they actually want to click next and go next. And so that design is hard. But it means you really truly need to understand your customer and empathize with what your customer is doing and what problem are they trying to solve. So many fintechs try to solve too big a problem. If they mm-hmm. only accept you solve something that's really genuinely wanted by the customer, they'll have a hit. And so just focus on getting down to what the customer really, really wants.
Neil, I'd like to thank you so much for your time today. That is so much insight and help that it's beyond my approach to say more than just thank you. So I'd like to thank you for joining us to this podcast and sharing your insights. Your contribution has added tremendous value to our listeners, and I'm excited to deal with you more in the future. Thanks very much for your time, Neil.
Thanks, Kendall.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening. If you found this conversation valuable, please leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We will see you next time on Mind Matters.